next and last stop is
Atlantic Avenue, Barclays Center.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Geo on the Fan.
A lot of Nets podcasts.
I mean, the only Net fans you know, the only Nets fans you know.
At least they've got some self-awareness.
I mean, come on, man. Or are these guys?
Welcome back to the Only Net Fans You Know podcast. I'm Peter.
Charlie is away on his bachelor party trip, so we have a little bit of a different episode for you guys today. This is going to be a crossover episode with Peter Kennedy of Subway Sports Talk. He's a Knicks fan, but he gives the Nets a fair shake. We're going to be talking about the recent road trip, the race for the fifth seed for the Nets and the Knicks. We're going to break down both teams' schedules, looking at their remaining games. And we're also going to be talking about what a possible first-round matchup against the Cavs might mean for both teams. Go check out Subway Sports Talk for a little bit of an extended episode.
O'Neal bumping with Jokic. Gordon inbounding. Lob it to Jokic. Out of the wing. Turns a three for the win. No good. Off to the right. Jokic misses a three. And the Nets win in Denver. 122-120 the final. Jokic had a shot behind the arc to try and win it.
Length. What we don't have that much more time of is this NBA season. And it's freaking heating up. We got the New York Knicks and the Brooklyn Nets off a road trip here where the Knicks went 2-2 and they lost the first two. So coming back and winning that the second two there was absolutely enormous for them. The Nets have been playing, I want to say, a positive brand of mediocre basketball from a record perspective. They haven't had a blow away record since the trade, but there's a lot of good things to grasp from. But right now the Knicks are fifth. They're tied in the loss column, but the Knicks have two more wins than the Nets because they've played two more games. So only one game separates them in the standings. It's now time to discuss this past weekend where, Peter, I'll go to you first before I get back into the Knicks here. The Nets were playing pretty good basketball there. They had a nice win or two. And at the end of this road trip with Oklahoma City Thunder loss, that one probably stung a little bit. So with this whole little road trip, post all the moves, post them settling in here, Where are you at right now, especially what you just saw them do on the road in some tough games?
This is it's hard to tell with this team, and I'm going to tell you why, all right? First of all, we have everything going down with the KD trade. We go on this road trip, and the Nets are starting to find themselves. They go 3-2. They started off with a blowout against the Rockets. It was 118-96. And then the next four games, you have the Bucks, the Wolves, Denver, and OKC. In all these games, win or loss, they had one inconsistent quarter. It's always one inconsistent quarter with this team. They play great defense for the majority of the game. It's the offense. You could tell this team is missing that one bucket getter, that Dame Lillard, that Kyrie Irving. Bridges is going to be great. Bridges might be a star. I love the guy. The defense is great. The offense is great. But there's just, at least at this point, there's not that fire of, I'm going to take over this game right now. He has the passion, but just not, the game is just not there yet. He's still only 26. But if I could read off a couple quarters, if you don't mind me going through this on my notes. The Bucks game. They wind up sitting the majority of their starters. Bridges and Finney-Smith only play for 10-15 minutes. They lose 118-113. In the first quarter, they were down 37-20. The Wolves game, they win by one in overtime. Fourth quarter, 26-17, they lose the fourth quarter. Wolves tie it. Like I said, they still won by one. Denver game, fourth quarter, a 33-24 run by the Nuggets. OKC, 69-45 second half. It's just a tale of a team that's good, not great, but the inconsistency is clearly there.
That's a great point, because when you watch them, you feel that. Like, if you're, say you're flipping back and forth, like the Knicks and Nets are on the same time, right? You can flip back and forth and see two different teams with the Brooklyn Nets. And that's something that, you know, I don't want to say it was expected for this to happen, but we do have to circle back, because where, like, basically you've had a roller coaster season, right? If we're being honest.
No, it's been a roller coaster 4 years.
That's true. That's a great point. It's been a roller coaster since the KD and Kyrie acquiring. But this year in particular was like the climax of this roller coaster, because you had this insane stretch when everyone's healthy, where they're playing the best basketball in the NBA. Kevin Durant's looking like an MVP candidate. Kyrie Irving's playing on his best behavior and his best basketball. And people are talking nationally about the Nets, saying, yes, this team has what it takes to be an NBA title team. And now you get Kevin Durant hurt. Kyrie does his best to hold them afloat. And then all of a sudden he wants to be traded, and he is traded. And then all of a sudden Kevin Durant is also traded. And this happened in the matter of like a few days of each other. And all of a sudden the stress and the weight of these stars is off your shoulders, but so is your championship hopes, right? So it all happened at once, where now you're not stressed about this craziness of these two stars kind of driving a franchise nuts, but you also ran out of championship hopes. Yet people knew this team would have a real heart and a real ability to be likable, which I think there's a lot of likable guys on the Nets. But just talk about that roller coaster from you, from doing your podcast, The Only Nets Fans You Know, because I'm sure like every other episode could have been an absolutely completely different vibe.
And it was. That was a very good point. You got to think about this as a Nets fan. There's two types of Nets fans, right? There's ones that lived in Brooklyn and only became fans in 2012. I've been a Nets fan my entire life. I grew up with those finals teams, losing to the Lakers, losing to the Spurs. I've seen some shit fucking basketball. Some like horrible seasons that like I would throw shit. I would throw my phone. I would throw bricks. Want to throw bricks. And it's so hard being a fucking Nets fan. And I know it's hard being a Knicks fan too. I get it. But you watch the Lakers, you watch the Heat, right? The Nets have these heartbreaking losses, these horrible seasons. They go into the draft, the John Wall draft. They're supposed to get the first overall pick. They slide down. You know, the KG trade. That happens, right? So I've been through all of this. So losing KD and Kyrie, for these people that were like, oh, the drama, all the drama, fucking boo-hoo. I've been through so much shit. I would trade almost anything to get a Nets championship. You know, KD is probably the best Nets player of all time. Probably the biggest sports icon in Brooklyn since Jackie Robinson. Like, let's be honest. And, you know, some people are just like a little like bitch asses. They don't like the drama. You know what? Sometimes you got to trade shit to win. Look at Dennis Rodman with the Bulls. You know, do you think the owners loved him? You think the GM loved him? You think Phil Jackson loved him all the time? No. But sometimes you got to sacrifice to win. You know, were these guys a little, you know, asshole-ish? Yeah, I get that. But I feel like if you really want to win, if your religion is winning, as the Nets owner has said, you suck it up. You suck it up because you know that you can win a championship with these guys. And I really feel like they were very close to winning a championship this year. I'm biased. I get it. But it's just a nightmare. I was up all night when the KD trade happened. I'm talking to my other Nets fans online. I'm listening to Spaces on Twitter, right? Nets Spaces.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Mac Miller album. I'm like, oh, yeah.
I like Mac Miller. Shout out Mac Miller.
That's Faces. Yeah, shout out for sure. Continue. Sorry.
Yeah. So I'm on Nets Spaces on Twitter. All of a sudden, everybody starts screaming. I'm like, what the fuck is this? It's the KD trade. Just to sum up all of my emotion and all my feelings, sometimes you got to suck it up if you want to win. And you know what? It wasn't so bad having KD and Kyrie on the team. You know, Nets had horrible luck. They might be cursed. But if you really want to win, this was the option to do it. You're not going to win now. You may not win next year unless you get somebody great. And even then, I would still take my chances with KD. I'm going to ask you one question to bring it back to you for this. if Kyrie Irving sits out for the rest of the year, they keep the roster as is, no Dinwiddie, no Finney Smith, and you keep KD, would you rather have done that and possibly have a championship? Possibly. Maybe you make a deal at the deadline? Or do you do what they did and just, you know, shuffle up the deck?
I don't think the trade was there without moving Kyrie to get them to equal ground with the Bucks, specifically the Bucks. I think the Bucks are the best team in the East. I think the Celtics are right there and the Sixers are right there. They could have probably competed with the Celtics and Sixers without Kyrie Irving to some extent, because we saw Kevin Durant basically do it alone when James Harden was on one leg. But I think to your point, and that leads me to my, to your point in question, leads me to kind of where I was thinking already. To all these fans out there who say, oh, this is what you get, this is what you deserve by going for two stars who are fickle and are assholes, or whatever the hell people say online, right? Way worse stuff than I just said out loud. Like, sure, you can say that all you want, but every single team in the league does exactly what the Brooklyn Nets just did. Because guess what? For three years, because the first year Kevin Durant missed the entire year. For 3 years, there was points of the season where the Nets were serious championship hopefuls. And no, not every other team in the league could say that, right? Like, what was the Nets' plan if they don't acquire KD and Kyrie? To let Spencer Dinwiddie and D'Angelo Russell continue to cook and be a seven seed for the rest of eternity? That's not that great of an option. And I know that team was lovable. I love them. I loved watching that team. However, their championship aspirations were non-existent at that point. They needed a star. Every team would have done what they did. And for those moments in time where they're 18-3 with Kevin Durant and Kyrie and the group they had this year, and Nick Claxton playing great and Ben Simmons, which we haven't even brought up yet, we'll get to him later. Like, that was real. That was a serious point in time where the Nets were one of the best teams in the East, one of the best teams in the NBA. That's a risk you take every single time. 10 times out of 10, you go for that. And especially for Knicks fans. I'm a Knicks fan, and Knicks fans would piss me off when they're saying, like, oh, we didn't even want them, or you have KD and Kyrie. They're your problem now. That is BS. The Knicks were desperate for Kevin Durant to choose them. And then he didn't, and he also pooped in their face by saying, fuck the Knicks, right? Like, that hurt Knicks fans' feelings, and that's why they are – that's why – I don't want to say we, because I'm not like that. I'm an NBA fan, an NBA appreciator. I love Kevin Durant. I never said that. I wanted KD real bad, and if we had him, maybe the same exact thing would have happened, and guess what? We would have been a closer to a championship team with Kevin Durant for 1.5 years and some drama than we are right now. And the Knicks have been having a fantastic season. So to all the people out there who try to make fun of the Nets for what just went down, go take a look at your franchise in the mirror. Unless you're a fan of the Warriors, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Boston Celtics, or the Phoenix Suns, I don't want to hear nothing from anybody, because everybody would have wished for Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving to choose them. That is the be-all, end-all of that conversation. And it didn't work. And guess what? The Nets are now in a position to be able to retool without bottoming out. And that's a great place to be in the NBA, because now they got cap flexibility, they got hella draft picks, and they got some serious players that they like and other teams like a lot too for more trades down the road. I like where the Nets are at, even if the championship expectations aren't exactly there right now.
I agree. They have a lot of options that people don't, you know, think about or look into. I'm going to throw a couple at you. When they did the KD trade, they wound up getting a huge exception, right? They got a huge trade exception. So Nets are over the cap now, especially with Ben Simmons' big contract. He's going to be making $36 million, then $40 million the next 2 years. They're over the cap. They can make a deal to get somebody. I don't know. I'm just going to keep on saying Dame, because I feel like that's the best outcome. Yeah. They can get, you know, a Dame Lillard and eat that huge contract and just switch it with that trade exception without giving up a player. That's a huge deal. The Nets gave up 3 second rounds to get that trade exception. If you remember with Crowder, originally they were going to get 5 second rounders from the Bucks. They only got two and that trade exception. That trade exception is a huge part of the next, I don't know, year or so, depending what the Nets want to do. It's pretty big. The draft picks, we already know about them, right? That's self-explanatory. But they could trade a Dinwiddie, that trade exception and a couple picks and maybe get somebody. I agree what you said. They're in a lot better of a position that you would think, considering losing KD, Kyrie, and not having their own picks. So it could be worse.
It definitely could be worse. And that's something that's important to note for the Nets fans. And I remember when the trade happened on this podcast with my buddy Alec, we're talking about the Knicks. He's a Knicks fan. And he's saying, oh, well, the Knicks are a lock to now jump the Nets in the standings. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I think this team's going to compete. They're going to be frisky and they're not going to be a rollover team. Like, they're going to hang tight. And that's what they've done. Like, they're 5-5 in their last 10. I don't think they're a team you expect to go on a 9-1 run through the next 10. Right. But they are a team that can win 7 out of 10. They can get a little hot. They can beat anybody. We just saw them beat the, little bit struggling Nuggets a couple games ago. They beat the Timberwolves, who are a true playoff team in the Western Conference. And they were 3-2 in this road trip on 5 games. That's a respectable bunch. That's a team that expects to be in the playoffs. And now with the standings the way they are, you know, they have a 2.5-game lead on the Miami Heat. The Knicks have a 3.5-game lead on the Miami Heat. There's a real chance for the Nets to not even be a play-in team. Is that something you expected when this trade happened? Did you think to yourself, damn, we're going to slide to the play-in? Or did you have hope that they would stay in the top six?
I thought they're either going to do what they're doing now or kind of like bottom out. Because if you look at the team, there's not a lot of offense, and that's where the biggest problem is now. Ironically, they have KD and Kyrie, great offense, leading the league in field goal percentage and threes. Now you're looking at a team that's pretty much in, I think, the bottom 5 in field goal percentage since the KD trade. So it's an issue. I feel like they're a player away. This year is kind of like a wish-wash year in my mind. Maybe they might upset someone in the first round, but I can't see them doing anything more than that. You could see the better teams with these guys, with like a Brunson who could just go off randomly one game. And that is a major issue. That is a major issue. They have to play great defense, and they have no backup center. Finney Smith is pretty much the backup center. Can you imagine Embiid playing against Finney Smith? You're going to have to play
48 minutes.
Exactly. Claxton's going to have to play the whole game. Could you imagine?
Sharp plays 10 minutes or whatever, but yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's true. So we're going to get into the playoff hopes. Let's talk about the Knicks for a hot minute before we get into the race for the fifth seed, which is our next topic coming up. The Knicks on this road stretch, which I went into with some nerves, honestly, Pete, I really did. I saw it coming. The writing was on the wall. They've been playing such amazing basketball. You mentioned the Nets stats over the last, since the trade, basically. In the last 15 games, they literally have the worst field goal percentage in the league. They're 30th in field goal percentage over the last 15. The Knicks, on the other hand, are top 10 in that category. They're second in win percentage. They're 11-4 over the last 15. And they're up in a lot of different categories. They're rebounding the ball super well. They're shooting pretty well from three. They're getting to the free throw line a good bit. Like, they're doing all the right things. And we go to this stretch here where they had the Kings, a very good team, a great offense. They had the Clippers, Lakers, and Trailblazers. They lose the first two. They end up coming back strong with a strong win against the Lakers. They pretty much manhandled Portland after a slow start just 2 nights ago. And that 2-2 run on the road trip really felt incredibly important. Obviously, you want to win road trips. They've been one of the best, if not the best, road team in the NBA this year. And I had nerves going into it. And I think I was proven right for the most part. But what they continue to show is a level of tenacity that allows them to compete in games where maybe they're a little fried. Maybe Julius Randle doesn't have it. They have enough guys to kind of come at you from multiple angles. Quickly's been great since Brunson's been hurt. Josh Hart obviously has been just a game changer for them in all these subcategories outside of scoring, which he's done a decent job with. And I was blown away a little bit by that comeback on the West Coast trip, beating the Lakers, beating the Portland Trailblazers, leaving that road trip at 2-2. And the difference between the Knicks and the Nets right now is exactly what you were talking about. It's that all-star presence. If you look at their teams, they're actually very similar. The only real difference is that Mikal Bridges is the only guy really who can consistently get 20. And the Knicks right now have 3 20-point-per-game scorers. That's the big difference between these two teams. And between Brunson and Randle being all-star caliber players, Barrett and Quickley being 20 points any given night, they have the option and the ability to play in the 120s and the 130s if they can, if they have to. And that's been really the big shift for the Knicks team this entire season. And now moving forward, I feel like I feel a better comfort and a better confidence knowing that even with their backs against the wall, that they can still put out a great effort and beat anybody on any given night. From your perspective as a Nets fan, but a New York guy who obviously, you know, has your hand on the pulse of the Knicks a little bit here, when did your expectations kind of change, right? Because they were looked at as a six seed hopeful, but a play-in likely team. And now they're sitting right here in the 5-6 spot or the 5 spot currently right above the Nets as a team that a play-in would be disappointing, right? So where do you stand on the Knicks and kind of where did it change for you where you thought, wow, this team can be a top 5 seed?
I never said that.
If you believe that at all, right?
I never said that.
I put words in your mouth.
It's okay.
So where do you stand basically on the Knicks?
Yeah, coming into the year, I called the Knicks the mid 3. Didn't believe in Brunson. Don't believe in RJ. Feel like Randall's overpaid. Randall, good, not great player. Brunson at this point has made me into a believer. I got to eat it. I got to take my L. You know, the guy could score. Don't love him. I hate him actually as a Nets fan, you know, on the court.
Yeah.
Don't like the guy. I still think that Barrett is overrated. Very, very overrated in my mind. I could see where Knicks fans hold, you know, put their hat on with him, but not a big fan. Overall, I don't know. It's tough with the Knicks because I could see them going into flames or I could see them doing, you know, overachieving and actually making maybe an Eastern Conference Finals in the right situation versus the right team, right? It's very interesting following them. Thibs has them playing well. They're playing great defense. And it's all about who gets hot at the right time, right?
And they were hot for a while now and almost seemed like they were going to cool off, which is part of my point of like, I thought they were going to really cool off. I really did. I thought there was going to be a little bit of a negative stretch here. And all these Knicks fans, including myself, are going to eat some crow saying, yeah, we have a chance to catch the Cavaliers. And then all of a sudden, we're behind the Nets. We're behind the Heat. What just happened, right? Like that was and is still in play. And I'm sorry for putting words in your mouth there because you know, I didn't need to do that because I didn't really know what your take fully was. And I think it's very fair. And you mentioned RJ Barrett. You mentioned how Knicks fans kind of hold him in a special place. I got to say, there's a lot of Knicks fans out there who do not love RJ Barrett, who think that he can be detrimental to this team. And one of the things that drives me nuts is it feels like he relishes too much in getting more opportunities, right? Like Brunson goes out and RJ Barrett almost looks excited. Like, yes, more shots for me. And he kind of turns off that playmaker instinct that we've seen over time when he can make some good passes. He can make some nice dump offs to Mitch Robinson and et cetera. And now he's got blinders on, just going to the rim and showing off very mediocre at best touch around the rim, taking some bad shots. But then there are games like against Portland on Tuesday night, where he was like 8 for 14 and had 24 points. Like that is the type of RJ game that you hope for, that you expect at least relatively frequently. But I'm telling you, Pete, a lot of Knicks fans out here not pleased with RJ Barrett because of those blinders, because of his, not because of his work ethic, but because of his decision-making that can just be so frustrating when it's so clear to us that his path to being great or even very good, because I don't know if great is in the cards for him, but for him to be very good, he's not going to be a 28 point per game guy. I don't think that's in the card for RJ Barrett. His efficiency is just not good enough, but can he be an 18 to 22 point guy who gets his assist up from 2.5 to 4.5. Like that is his ticket to being a really, really good starter. And right now, the way he's been playing, I think the frustration that you see when you watch him, when you hear people hype him up and you're like, what are we hyping up here? I think Knicks fans are right there with you, at least a good chunk of them.
You know who I really love? I'm sorry if I'm changing the topic, but I love Quickly.
Oh, he's been electric lately, man.
He's a dog. That guy is a dog. And I feel like it's a player like him that really takes the Knicks over the top, right? Because he's not the, you know, look at the scouting report against the Knicks. You know, he's not the main guy, right? We know that. He's not going to be the first option, not the second option, but he just makes like good decisions. And I feel like he's like a spark plug for you guys. And it's a pain in the ass. I think one game he was he fucking killed us.
And he has those games where he gets incredibly hot from three and he's just hitting these crazy shots and you're very impressed by it. And you got to also give him credit. His defense has been really good this year. Not a guy who, when he came into the league, you would say, yeah, that guy looks like he's going to become a near lockdown type guy. But this season, start to finish, he's been a plus defender and a big reason of steadying that second lineup when Brunson's there and now filling in for Brunson. I mean, he's averaging nearly 20 points per game.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special report.
NBA fans, it's time to bring the hoops action to the palm of your hand with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet $5 and win $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, for a limited time, all new and existing customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app today, opt in, and place a same-game parlay on any NBA game, and if it doesn't hit, you'll get your bonus bet back. Download the app now and sign up with code TBPN. New customers can bet $5 on the NBA and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With code TBPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See our show notes for details.
We now join our regularly scheduled program already in progress.
So let's move on to that next segment you're talking about here. And that's the race for the fifth seed. Because right now, whether Knicks fans want to believe it or not, your Nets right there, they're in it, baby. And they got two more games left on the schedule than the Knicks. They got 13 left. The Knicks got 11. You do have a couple tough games coming up, including the Kings and Nuggets, and then a back-to-back against Cleveland and Miami before a little bit of a lighter portion of the schedule with Orlando, Houston, Atlanta, Utah, and Detroit and Orlando back down the second portion of that schedule. So the Nets have a schedule that looks like they can win more than half their games moving forward. The Knicks have a schedule where they got the Nuggets, Timberwolves, Heat. They also have the Orlando Magic and the Houston Rockets. They got then the Heat and Cavs again, followed by Wizards, Pacers twice, and Pelicans. Relatively favorable schedules, a couple tough ones mixed in for both teams, a lot of similar teams remaining for both of these squads. So with that being said, this race for the fifth seed is on. It is hot. The Nets have two games left to make up what they are missing in the win column right now. So where are you feeling with this race here?
Like you said, both teams, couple games left. Nets have 13, right? 11 of them are going to be home. The Nets have the 11th easiest schedule. And I got to look at the Knicks over here. The Knicks have the 8th easiest schedule. And just comparing the two schedules, Knicks have it nice. Knicks have it very, very nice. I think they're going to go on another winning streak. The toughest games, I would say, you got the Cavs, Denver, and Miami. Only, and out of the 11 games left for the Knicks, only three of them are against teams over 500, at least at the time of recording. Like, that's juicy.
Yeah, well, the Heat, they play the Heat twice. So if you count that twice, then there's three others. So, yeah, five games, technically four teams. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for that correction. And so with the Nets, the whole season is going to come down to maybe a 1-2 week span for the, I guess you could say for both teams. Nets are going to be playing the Cavs twice. And then a week later, the Knicks are going to be playing the Cavs. Funny enough, within the same, I don't know, I think it might be 7 days, 8 days, 9 days. Both of these teams are going to be taking on the Cavs and the Heat. I think, like you just said, we're going to be playing the Cavs twice. You guys have the Heat twice. We have the Heat once. You guys have the Cavs once. Those games are going to make up the season for both teams. Let's say the Knicks, you know, sweep, right? Let's say they win out those games. Let's say the Nets could beat up on the Cavs. Let's say, you know, they struggle against the other teams. You could have the Knicks really leapfrogging over here. I really believe that. There's a very good chance of that. At worst, I think you guys are happy with the fifth seed. I feel like the Nets have to have a lot more luck. The Nets have to have, I don't even know. They just have to get it together with this. The schedule is going to be a little bit tougher than people think.
And the weird part with these two teams, right, are two New York teams that for some reason there's not a lot of love between the fans, which I'm not one of those guys. I'm somebody who pulls for the Nets. I like the Nets, and I've liked a lot of their players over time, right? With the Heat and Cavs coming up in this conversation so much, it's going to be really weird as a Nets fan and as a Knicks fan when the other team is playing the Heat and Cavs, because the Nets are kind of rooting for the Knicks to beat the Cavs. I mean, for the Knicks. Let me restart that. The Nets are rooting for the Knicks to beat the Heat, kind of. But they're also racing the Knicks. So it's a really weird thing where you almost got to root for a split. Like, you got to just root for them to beat up on each other a little bit, and then you take care of your own business. Similarly for the Knicks with the Nets. You know, you're rooting for the Nets to lose because you want to make sure you're in that five seed. But you also kind of wouldn't be that mad if the Nets beat the Cavs twice, because that helps the Knicks possibly get a chance at the four seed. So it's a really, really weird, jumbled up Eastern Conference here coming up this final stretch. Cause like, I'm going to watch those Nets Cavs game and I'm not going to know who to root for. Like, deep down, I kind of pull for the Nets a little bit. I'd like to see that story of them kind of holding on without KD and Kyrie. I think that'll be a good story. I think the Heat will handle their business in the play-in to make the playoffs anyway, but I'm going to be so torn, dude. I'm not going to know what to do with my hands, because on one hand, Cavs win. All right, great. We get another game above the Nets. If the Nets win, great. We have a better chance of four. So what do I do? What are you rooting for when the Nets play against, the Knicks play against the Heat? Like, are you rooting for the Knicks? You're rooting for the Heat. Where do you go there as a fan?
It's tough because this is going to be another week or two and we don't know where the standings are going to be, right? It could be the Nets might have the lead on the Knicks and the Cavs in a week, or the Knicks might jump ahead. So it's really hard to determine. But I would say this, if you're a Knicks fan, obviously you want the Knicks to do well. You want the Knicks to succeed. If you're a Nets fan, you want them to do well. So if it takes a Knicks win for the Nets to move up a seed, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. You know what I mean? I'm all for it. It's all situational. Imagine if these three teams are tied, like in the last week of the season, what craziness this is going to be.
It's entirely possible. And actually, I just realized the Cavs are playing as we speak right now. They're playing against the Sixers, and I don't know what the score is. I'm going to try to pull it up because all those games matter, right? Like the idea of the Knicks catching the Sixers, that's out. The Sixers are playing incredible basketball. The Cavs are playing pretty well too. Right now, the Sixers are winning by 6 with 5.5 minutes left. They're only separated by 3 games because the Sixers are down 4. They have 4 less losses or 5 less losses than the Cavs as we're recording this. So the Sixers are kind of out of reach, right? That's 6 games between the Knicks and Sixers, 7 between the Nets and Sixers. So it's really between the Cavs, Knicks, Nets, and Heat. And that's going to be incredibly exciting down the stretch here. So let's talk about how these teams match up with those teams, right? Because whether it be in this final stretch of the regular season or in the first round of the playoffs, we got a really good chance at Knicks Cavs in the first round, Nets Cavs in the first round, Knicks Sixers in the first round, or Nets Sixers in the first round. So let's start off with the Cavs. Obviously, some familiar faces over in Cleveland for you and all the Nets fans out there, with Jared Allen and LeVert still hanging around over there. There's people out in Brooklyn who have fond memories with those folk. However, they're your enemies now, right? So when you think of the Cleveland Cavaliers and this current Nets squad, how do you think that matchup plays out with your strengths against their strengths?
They played one game against each other. The Nets wound up blowing them out, 125-117. We know that's with KD and Kyrie. The Nets shot like 60% that game, ridiculous number. And this is a different team, right? This is a totally different team. You got to take that game, throw it out. And the matchup right now does not look well. It does not look well. We were talking before about the backup center. You can't have, you know, Jared Allen getting a 20-20 game on you, 20 points, 20 rebounds. They got Mobley. Like I said, they got Jared Allen. They don't have Kevin Love anymore. That kind of helps the Nets. But overall, it's not a great matchup. Garland kills the Nets. He's putting up 22 points a game this year. 47 field goal percentage, 42% from three. We know Mitchell's killing it. It's all about, you know, can you contain Garland and Mitchell? Right now, I don't think the Nets can make up for the rebounding. So you got, I don't know what to do with this team. I actually think the Nets might have slightly better chance against Philadelphia, just because I think the Cavs are on an upswing and the size difference is going to be really, really troubling to try to figure out.
Yeah, and honestly, with the Ben Simmons question mark, you know, that's the guy that you need to slow down Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland in that series, right? Like, that's your only hope, right? So we haven't even talked about Ben Simmons yet. So let's go aside from the specific matchups or maybe bring it back into it. Where does Nets Nation stand right now with Ben Simmons? He's not getting as many minutes as he was. What is he even is he playing lately? Like, the Ben Simmons world, he's getting DMPs right now. Is he hurt? What's going on?
He's
with
hurt.
Ben Simmons? So he's not even playing right now, right? I did know that, but is he coming back soon? What's the word here with Ben Simmons? I'm sorry, I'm not aware.
It's all right. I don't blame you. It's a nothing burger here. So, in one of my last podcasts, I actually looked this up and did some research on the injury that he had. The surgery that he had, the herniated disc in his back, that takes a year to recover. They actually did a study on it. The players that got the surgery in the first year had lower numbers in games played and their player efficiency rating right after the surgery. It takes them 2 years. It takes them maybe 3 years to fully get back, if they get back. But the second year, you should see a big increase in his numbers. And if you're a Nets fan, that's kind of what you have to be hoping right now. Because let's face it, if you're going to trade Ben Simmons, it's going to be you giving up picks, you giving up players. It's a mess. It's a mess. Right now, he was coming back. I think he had a knee injury, and then all of a sudden his back started hurting. You know what? We could say this. I could say this. He's not supposed to be playing. He should have not been playing this year. When you have a KD and Kyrie, you try to force him back early because, you know what? This is the push to win a championship. He is the final piece. And listen, he would fit amazing on this Nets team. You know, he doesn't even have to put up 20 points. Puts up 10, 10, and 10 or around those numbers. And this Nets team is looking nice. You have Bridges and Simmons. That defense is looking nice.
That's something that I said when the trade happened with Kevin Durant. I was like, I am so sad that Ben Simmons is not Ben Simmons anymore. Because the 2019-2020 version of Ben Simmons on this Nets roster is exactly what Ben Simmons hopefuls were hoping for back then, right? Everyone was saying, oh my God, Ben Simmons, all defense level player, all NBA level player. People want to forget that. He made all NBA teams. He was defensive player of the year candidate. His passing was elite, right? Like, people would literally say, if Ben Simmons was in a Giannis situation, that might be the best version of Ben Simmons we can get. That idea now is laughable. It's hilarious to even think we would say Ben Simmons and Giannis in the same sentence. And that's a shame. It makes me sad because I was I'm a Ben Simmons. I don't want to say stan. That feels aggressive, but I'm a Ben Simmons appreciator. I've always liked his game. And now it's been incredibly hard to defend him, obviously, for obvious reasons. And that idea of this roster working so well with him, it just makes me upset because he could have been a guy to make this Nets team not just a 500 or slightly above 500 squad that's going to hopefully make the sixth seed, to a team that would stand tall right next to the Cavs and Knicks and Sixers and et cetera. But we don't have that guy right now. He does not exist. And that's just unfortunate. And hopefully he gets back to some semblance of who he was. And this Nets team could figure something out, whether they move on from him or not. But you're right. Trading him right now is pointless. You get pennies on the dollar. And there's no win out of that for the Brooklyn Nets other than moving on from him, which at this point is just not worth it.
I got a point to make over here with this hot take. KD stays if Ben Simmons is anything close to the last year. Maybe 2 years ago he played his full season.
Right.
Whenever that was. Yeah. Whenever he was an all-star that year.
He was just second runner-up for defensive player of the year.
If he's anything close to that, KD stays. KD, my theory, whatever KD might be saying, whatever he said that he was unsure about the talent on the roster. A Ben Simmons playing, let's forget all-star. Let's say very good starter. Very good starter Ben Simmons with KD on that team. I think that's enough to make KD stay. I really do.
Anything like 2020 Ben Simmons would have made it a lot harder for Kevin Durant to request that trade. 100% agreed. It's actually, that should be looked at as fact, because that dude is he was a dude. He was really freaking good. So the Nets matchup with the Cavaliers is tough. The one thing you hang your hat on is defense, right? If Mikal Bridges can go out there and just give Donovan Mitchell fits and make him be really inefficient, you can steal a game or two early and you never know what can happen. But I think that's like the only path, really, because they're not going to outscore them. They're not going to have two 25-point scorers the entire series. Like, you need Mikal Bridges to kind of go Super Saiyan mode a little bit to hang with that team. And the Sixers thing, you mentioned it before, the Joel Embiid factor might just be too much. You do have the James Harden choking in the playoffs factor, and you could see him just shitting the bed, right? If Mikal and Cam Johnson and Finney Smith are locking him up, but stopping Embiid is going to be incredibly hard. Nick Claxton trying to do it alone, right? Because that's kind of what the point would be. He'd be doing it alone. Anything else to add on the Nets matchups there in the playoffs, or can we hop over to the Knicks?
Go for it.
So the Knicks and the Cavs, there's a little bit of history there as well. Not shared players at the moment because we didn't make the Jared Allen move to Cleveland or whatever, but the Donovan Mitchell thing comes into play. The Knicks were obviously in the running to trade for Donovan Mitchell. They did not. People forget that was after the Jalen Brunson signing. People will try to say that they could have had Mitchell over Brunson. No, they could have had them both together. They did not. You can argue how good, bad, or indifferent that may be, but here we are running down the stretch with the most likely outcome is the Cavs and Knicks face off in the first round of the playoffs. The one thing that the Knicks have that we talked about before is the two guys who can really score with Garland and with Mitchell. All right, Mitchell's probably the best player. Do you think he's the best player in that series? Mitchell over Randall and Brunson?
I don't think it's close.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there. I just wanted to make sure we're on the same page. He's the best player, definitely the best offensive player, and the best overall player in that series. After that, who do you think are the next two or three best players between the Cavs and the Knicks? Putting you on the spot a little bit.
That's tough.
So I'll run.
I'm good. I'm just trying to think. I'll give you two. The next two best players, I guess Brunson, you got to put in there. And I'm going to lean to Garland. Garland is a Nets killer, so I'm definitely biased, but he could go off. I'm a believer in his game.
I was also going to say Garland. I think no matter how you put it, I think Garland is, I don't think he's necessarily better than, like, I don't think he's a lock for the second best player in that series, because we don't know what Randall is going to show up in the playoffs, right? Like, one of the weird things about this Knicks team, even over their last 15 games, they've been, 11-4. They've been awesome. They have the lowest assist total in the league over the last 15 games. And they also have the second worst free throw percentage in the league over the last 15 games. Those are two stats that you look at and say that should not lead to a winning team, to one of the best teams over the last 15, yet here we are. And that is what leads me to my point about Julius Randle. He just sometimes still is frustrating when he kind of has blinders on as well and is looking for his shot too much and gets double teamed. He has a turnover issue, especially late in games. We've seen him so many times like, yeah, give me the ball in the post right here. I got you. And then he gets the ball in the post, dribbles into a double team and loses the ball, right? And with those guys like Mobley hanging around, Okoro hanging around, Donovan Mitchell's great in the passing lanes, like, that makes me nervous. And I think I would actually kind of lean towards your answer there too and say that Brunson and Garland are the next two best players in that series. In this regular season, it's Mitchell, Randall, and then you can argue Brunson or Garland. But then in the playoffs, I don't feel as comfortable doing that with Julius Randle. as a more outside viewer, where is your take on Randle in the playoffs? We know what happened in Atlanta in that series. Do you think he's changed at all, or do you think some of those issues are going to show up again? And if you're watching on YouTube, you just saw the Reggie Miller choke signal over there from Pete. So maybe you just leaned your take there.
Absolutely. We've seen these games that he, even against the Nets, you know, Nets Knicks big rivalry, he puts up some duds. You know, I don't want to like kick the guy when he's down, but I would not trust Julius Randle with my life in a playoff game. If I put all my earnings into, you know, Julius Randle in a playoff series, I would probably lose all my money. I don't trust the guy. I'm sorry.
And thankfully for the Knicks, they have Jalen Brunson, who last year really led the Mavs because Luka was hurt for most of that first series. He led them to a first series victory. He was a key component in their second round win to get them to the conference finals. And I think that's why you and I both lean Brunson when we're talking playoff specific matchups against the Cavaliers. And the rest of the lineup here, I got to talk about Mitchell Robinson. Did you happen to see what Mitchell Robinson posted on his Instagram story?
Fill me in. I saw like he wants to be left alone or something.
Some kind of, but also he wants more action, I guess. So basically,
oh, cardio.
Right.
He's talking about like he's getting cardio. Well, listen, when you're the second best center in New York City, you know, sometimes you gotta do some extra cardio.
Well played over there. Honestly, two of the best defensive centers in the league are in New York, Claxton and Robinson.
I agree.
And fantastic. And Robinson coming back from his injury was a huge reason that this streak stayed alive and this great play remained for the New York Knicks. His rebounding is off the charts. His offensive rebounding is tops in the league. We know that he's a great defender. Do you put any stock into his frustration? So basically his Instagram story said, you kind of hit it already with the cardio, but he said, like, I'm tired as fuck. He wrote ASF, tired as fuck, just running around out here, not getting any opportunities to score, basically, right? Like, he's saying that he's not getting enough looks on offense and enough opportunity to be involved with the offense, which on one hand, I do get it. But there are also, you know, four other guys who need the ball in Randle, Brunson, Barrett, and Quickly. So I don't know if I can really agree with Mitch Robinson. Do you think this becomes a problem for the Knicks?
I actually think maybe, I think so, but it's going to be swept under the rug. Obviously, if you're in the NBA, you're getting minutes, you want to get shots, you want to, you know, touch the ball. Yeah, center, it must suck. It's a guard-oriented league, and it must suck sometimes being a center. But what does he want exactly? Does he want to be taking Steph Curry threes?
Right.
If you want to win, right, everyone wants to, quote-unquote, win. They want to win, but how your team wins is by everyone playing their role. It just sounds like he doesn't want to play his role. Didn't he just get a contract? Like, if you're getting paid, or, I mean, if you're going to be a free agent, I could understand that a lot more. It makes a lot more sense. But I think he just got paid. So it's very confusing to me.
Like, yeah, does he want just, like, two or three post touches a game? Like, I don't know. Give him the ball then. You know, I almost think that over this next 11 games for the Knicks, they make a point, right? Once per quarter or twice per quarter, you just give him a paint touch. Just say, here, Mitch, you're in the post. Go ahead. Show us or show yourself that you can or cannot do it, right? Like, you almost have to just take that bullet. You remember the Ben Wallace story with the Detroit Pistons back in the day? Every single first possession of the game for the Pistons, they would give Ben Wallace a post touch. And famously against the Lakers, he hits the shot that he never makes. And like the crowd goes nuts. The Pistons are running on all cylinders and it helped propel them momentum wise throughout that series. Like, does Mitchell Robinson need that? Do we need to just give him a post touch every single quarter or twice a game or three times a game? And maybe he falls on his face. Maybe that's what he needs. Maybe he needs to be humbled a little bit and shown that, bro, maybe you have what it takes to be a post player. We haven't seen it. You know, right now you're a rim runner and you're freaking good at it. You're a great defender. You're a great rebounder. Keep being great at that. You know, it kind of blows my mind a little bit that he'd go there if you just watch him play. Like, if you didn't see that Instagram story, you're thinking by just watching the game, there's no issues because he busts his ass. He rebounds so hard. He's playing defense so hard. So he doesn't check the boxes of somebody who's frustrated, but then he's saying this shit on Instagram and Twitter and whatnot, talking crazy. So I don't know how to feel about it. And I was thinking this watching the game the other day, some of these centers are truly the offensive linemen of basketball, right? They get no glory. They don't get the love. They don't touch the ball. So maybe they just need to run some plays through him. Maybe just put him on the high post and let him touch it so he can pass it. Maybe take a shot. I don't know, but I'm just like, I'm 15% nervous that this becomes a problem moving forward.
That's a fair point to make. And why do you do this in the middle of a playoff run? Right?
Like, hold this to the end, bro. Hold this to the end. Like,
I don't get it.
You almost made it. Ah, man. But nonetheless, I bring him up because he's incredibly important in the series against the Cavs. Between Mobley and Allen, that's two of the best defensive players in the Eastern Conference in the same backcourt or front court. Sorry. You need Mitch to rebound. You need Mitch to minimize paint touches. You need Mitch to alter as many Donovan Mitchell drives as humanly possible. So he is so important to this series. That's why I'm a little bit nervous about his comments. But nonetheless, I do think the Knicks, though they should not be favored to win the series against the Cavs, I think it should be relatively close. Like, I think if you, I don't know if you're a big gambler or not, but I think like the Cavs should be favored at minus 150, minus 160, not like minus 220, 250. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
I'm a little bit into it. I mostly do like money line and stuff, but I guess I agree with you for the most part. Still, we still have to get closer. Maybe somebody gets hurt. I'm really intrigued to see how the line is going to change after the Nets play them twice and after the Knicks play them once. And if they get the Nets or the Knicks, how much the line is going to change. We had a one game that the Knicks held them, I think, to like 81 points or something. It's like 81 points, yeah. 83 points. And, you know, that's scary. If you're a Cavs fan, that is very scary. You don't want to go into the Garden with a team that you know could shut you down, right? It's interesting. It's interesting. I think the lines are going to be very interesting.
Yeah, the Knicks are 2-0 against the Cavs so far. The Nets 1-0 with two remaining. So these games are so huge. I'm so freaking excited for these games, man. So I'm pumped. Let's finish off with some final predictions here. Again, Pete from the Nets fans, you know, the only Nets fans, you know, podcast, find that on all the podcast apps. Pete's great. And your co-hosts, give him a shout out as well while we're here.
Sure. My co-host, Charlie, he's Twitterless and Instagram. He has an Instagram, but he likes to keep it private. Mm-hmm. So we'll keep it at that. But yeah, follow us on Twitter at NetFans, you know, we drop an episode every week. We talk about games and stuff. We get other people on. Sort of stuff like this, talks like this.
Absolutely. So let's do some final predictions here, Pete. What do you think is going to be the final seeding in the Eastern Conference playoffs? If you want to go 5 through 7, just from the Cavs that's Cavs, Knicks, Nets, Heat. What is your final prediction on how this is going to shake out from the standings?
I'm going to be very bland. I'm going to just keep it the way that you just said. I think the Cavs can't be overtaken at this point. I think they're too good, not enough games. I think the Knicks, this is my big prediction, the Knicks are going to go on a big streak and be very hot entering the postseason. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do. And my lonely Nets are going to, hopefully they could stick where they're at. They're going to fight. They might drop maybe one more seed. But I feel very confident saying Miami's not going to catch us. But I'm always biased, right?
Well, it's been a mixed bag for Miami because for every time they show up and put out this crazy performance against a team, you know, that they're not supposed to beat, they also have basically split. Like they're just going every other at this point. They beat Utah, they lost to Orlando. They beat Cleveland, they lost to Cleveland. They beat the Hawks twice, they lost to the Knicks and Sixers, right? So like they're playing 500 basketball as well. So even if their name brand players like Bam and Jimmy Butler are a bigger level star than anyone on the Nets, they're not playing like a team that is better than the Nets. And I think that is the case here. I'm agreeing with you too. We're both going chalk. The Knicks are not catching the Cavs. Unfortunately, desperation would be the Nets beat the Cavs twice. the Knicks beat the Cavs and maybe we have a chance at catching the Cavs, but they're just a little too good for my liking. I think it's going to be Cavs, Knicks, Nets hang on to six. The Heat get seven and the Heat run through the play-in tournament and give the Celtics fits and nightmares in the first round again, which I don't know. Do you have a specific hatred for either the Celtics or the Heat for that matter?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Say that again.
Do you have a specific, like, is there a team that you don't like more? Do you not like the Celtics or the Heat? Like, do you have a hate for the Celtics? Because that's your history.
Okay. Both teams have they get a rivalry with the Nets. It's not Nets Knicks, right? But I hate both. I really hate both. I can't lie. Celtics are annoying as hell. Maybe I would give it slightly to the Celtics because they just swept us last year. So I would have to answer Celtics, but Miami's up there in the hate also.
And you know what bothers me about that Celtics sweep last year? People act like the Celtics just dominated the entire series. Those games were close.
Very.
The Nets played really good game. I mean, you could argue like by the end, by the time it was 3-0, like it was over, right? But game one was incredible. Kevin Durant played awesome, and Jason Tatum hit a spinning hook shot to win the game late in the game. And then the second game was close too. Like, people tried to act like the Nets were a disaster in the playoffs last year. It's not true. Not the case.
They played ugly basketball, but realistically, 2 to 3 shots made the entire series.
Correct.
Literally, like an extra three here, a miss over there. Game, like you said, game one, Tatum buzzer beater. I thought the Nets had that in the bag, and I think if they win game one, I think they might even win the series. I really do. I don't think it would be a sweep, but that was a huge momentum swing. And that changed. It felt like it changed everything after he hit that.
And similarly to the year prior when Kevin almost beat the Bucks by himself, kind of, oh, right? Like that one game where his foot was on the line, and sorry to bring this back up for you, like that game changed it all. That game changed it all. And the amount of deflation that took place for the Nets and Nets fans after losing the foot on the line game and losing game one against Boston completely changed the trajectory of the season. And guess what? Both of those series were losses against the team that won the Eastern Conference, right? Like, it's not like they lost to the freaking Hawks in the first round. They didn't lose to the Bulls, right? They lost to the Celtics, who won the East. They lost to the Bucks, who won the championship, right? The hindsight with this Nets run it drives me nuts. I'm sure it must drive you even more nuts, honestly.
You have no idea. Many sleepless nights. You have no idea.
All right. Well, Pete, this has been a great, great pleasure. If you want, please give a little plug. I know you just did it again, but do it one more time. Plug your podcast. Where do people find it? You said the Twitter already. Say it one more time.
Sure. It's the podcast is The Only Net Fans You Know. You can check us out anywhere that has podcasts. Follow us on Twitter. I do a lot of game recaps. I live tweet games. You can always see new episodes there. It's at Net Fans You Know.
Beautiful, 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 beautiful. Hopefully more podcasts for me and you in our future. This was loads of fun. Don't forget to subscribe at Subway Sports Talk as well on your podcast app and on YouTube. Hit the notification bell so you know when we drop new episodes. Subway Sports Talk on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, as well as my personal at Pete Kennedy with two Y's on the end on Twitter and Instagram and whatnot. Thank you. Thank you very much, Pete. Good luck to your Nets. Good luck to my Knicks, and hopefully we have some good basketball in store here in New York.